Right, welcome to this, the first lecture, Exploring the Foundations of Innovation Management. Today, we're going to be discussing the role of innovation in society and its impact on organizations. We're basically going to be setting up the main tensions that the course is going to be dealing with. More specifically, we're going to look at what role innovation plays in modern capitalism and the kinds of pressures that the nature of innovation-driven capitalism introduces for organizations. We're going to be doing that through three texts. First, we'll talk about Schumpeter's book, Capitalism, Socialism, and Democracy, and we'll be reading its chapter on creative destruction. Then we'll turn to Abernathy's book on the productivity dilemma and the chapter where he basically conceptualizes what that dilemma is. And finally, we'll talk about March's paper on exploration and exploitation. Through those two three texts, we'll move from the very macro level question of innovation's role in the economy to the meso level of what this means for organizations, to the micro level of the particular trade-offs that it implies in specific decision-making processes, and the concerns that might shape those processes. Uncharacteristically, this lecture is going to be somewhat short. You should think in the area of 25 minutes. The reason for that is that the ideas that we'll be presenting here are ones that we'll be returning to throughout the course, and we'll be exploring their implications in pretty much every class that we'll be having. And so we won't deal with those implications today. Instead, I'll just give a very short outline of the main ideas of the texts and just try to string them together to show the line of reasoning from the macro to the micro. And moreover, you should think about this lecture as providing a context for everything that comes after. It's the backdrop against which we'll discuss the impact of technologies, industrial dynamics, effort to manage and control, entrepreneurship, and the changing nature of innovation management. All of these things happen within the framework provided by a capitalist economy and plays out within what Schumpeter would call the gale of creative destruction. And so what we're trying to do today is to set the scene for our discussions of innovation management as they'll play out over the semester, not so much to end any of those discussions. Right. So if we're trying to understand the role of innovation in society and the economy, the seminal way to think about that comes from Schumpeter and his idea of creative destruction. But before we turn to that concept, it's good to keep in mind Schumpeter's basic understanding of what characterizes capitalism as an economic system. Right? And the essential thing here is that capitalism is a process, that capitalist economies constantly change and evolve. You may have heard about the Greek philosopher Heraclitus and the idea that you cannot enter the same river twice. A capitalist economy is a river in that sense, and it's never stagnant. And trying to understand the economy through any perspective that assumes stability is bound to be both really difficult and mired by error. The way you want to understand it is as this constantly evolving thing. And this is what places innovation at the center of Schumpeter's analysis, right? Innovation is the engine that drives this change in the economy. And the way innovation works is by creating creative destruction, right? Capitalism is driven by the emergence of new ideas, new insights, new ways of doing things. That's the creative part of the process. But while creating, there's also something that's being destroyed, something that is being pushed aside and made redundant. And this has sort of an almost mythological flavor to it. Right? Capitalism is this process of constant regeneration and recreation, where innovation constantly displaces what was there before and plants seeds for new things to emerge, where creative novelty brings destruction of established orders. Right? With this metaphorical creative destruction, Schumpeter is trying to push our horizon for understanding capitalism. It's not just about competition at any one point in time between companies on price or quality. Those are the things that are really easy for economists to conceptualize. And that's what we tend to emphasize when we talk about the economy. But for Schumpeter, the economy is more than that, right? It's also about the competition between companies around future technologies. We don't know what those new technologies will be or the kind of impact that specific technologies will have, but we can be sure that there will be change at some point. And even the most stagnant industries are going to be subjected to creative destruction. That is his argument, his assumption, and his observation across lots and lots of cases. And this is what makes creative destruction the essential fact of capitalism as portrayed by Schumpeter. Things will change because innovation happens, and because innovation is precisely what capitalism allows for. It allows for novelty, it allows for the ensuing destruction, for better or for worse. It's because of innovation that we're rich today and that we no longer live in caves and hunt with clubs, but in this incredible historical exception that is the contemporary world. But it's also because of innovation that we face the kind of existential threats to humanity that we currently do. And if we're going to overcome those threats, it will be because of innovation. Now, zooming from that sort of macro perspective to the organizational level, creative destruction, for all the things that it does to the economy, creates a very sort of specific double-headed pressure on organizations. They need to continuously improve themselves in the short run in order to compete on price and quality. Maintaining artificially high prices or artificially low quality or failing to continuously improve is a signal to potential competitors to enter the market. And this is what pushes monopolists, Schumpeter would say, to behave as if they are actually in competition. That's one of his many deep insights. But in the longer run, focusing on that short-term dynamic is going to leave organizations vulnerable to the threat of innovation. The threat of innovation fundamentally undermining the current ways of competing. Innovation, he says, affects not only the margin of profits, but the center of profit, the very survival of firms. This is the threat of creative destruction, right? That new ideas will be created that have the potential to destroy established orders. All organizations and all business strategies must, in Schumpeter's perspective, be seen in the context of creative destruction, or the potential creative destruction that characterizes capitalist economies. And it creates this basic anxiety, an anxiety which is a condition for all commercial activity. And that, as we'll get to in a moment, is what makes the productivity dilemma so important. Right? If we turn to Abernathy and his idea of the productivity dilemma, we can see something about how companies' innovation activity and organization changes over the product's life cycle, right? When a product is introduced, it's mostly surrounded by a lot of product innovation. That sort of gradually decreases until a dominant design occurs. That's a formative event in the development of a product, right? When the dominant design has been determined, product innovation is going to further decrease and then trend basically towards zero, a state of non-change. Process innovation, however, the development of new production methods, follows a very different path, right? It begins at a very low intensity at the beginning of a product's life cycle, and then stays low until a dominant design occurs, right? That makes a lot of sense. When you don't know what the product should be and how it's going to turn out, it's very hard to focus on developing optimal production methods, right? After the dominant design sort of settles, process innovation activity increases until it reaches a peak and then slowly decreases. It decreases, but it remains at a higher level than product innovation, but does trend towards zero. Again, this total stagnation of an industry. However, as innovation activities change, it's also worth noting that the organization that is producing a particular product is also changing, and it's changing in a sort of predictable way. It's changing from something very flexible to something much more fixed. In the fluid starting point, the organization is dynamic, it innovates quickly, it changes the product often, designs tailored solution, it produces at low volume, it searches for innovation, and it uses these generally applicable production methods. Something that doesn't necessarily match the product optimally. So in this sense, the organization is pretty clearly ineffective, but is adaptable and capable of incorporating new ideas and evolving with the product, right? But then because of competitive pressure, many areas are going to be optimized. The organization is going to look for ways to produce its things more efficiently. As the product ages, organizations therefore trend towards something that's much more specific and much less fluid. The focus is going to shift from innovating rapidly to being much more closely tied to efficiency and cost reductions. Innovations are going to become less dramatic, they're going to become more incremental. The organization is going to become more locked in, it's going to be more reliable, it's going to be more stable, and it's going to follow established procedures much more closely, right? Procedures that were not there when the organization was just introducing its novel innovation, right? It's also going to shift towards more capital intense and more idiosyncratic production system. You're going to have more machines that are tailored to specific tasks. And this also makes it impossible to tailor the product now being produced at large scale to specific standards, right? In other words, the organization becomes this very well-run mechanical or machine bureaucracy. And if it didn't make this transition, it would probably, following sort of a short-term logic of what prices and competition does, if the organization didn't make this transition, it wouldn't survive, right? Short-term competitive pressure is going to force that transition upon the organization, but at the same time, forcing it to lose its capacity for radical innovation, the kind of innovation that saw the organization emerge in the first place, right? And that is sort of the heart of the productivity dilemma. As you try to compete in the short run, you're going to lose out on the ability to be productive at a more meta level. You're going to lose the ability to be productive with new technologies. Now, notice sort of the use of Schumpeter's different definitions of innovation at play in this account of organizational change, right? We can imagine that there's an element of organizational innovation involved, for instance, in transitioning from a fluid to a specific organization. Scaling up of production is not just a technological exercise. It also means that there are going to be new ways of organizing that need to be developed, new coordination mechanisms, new forms of dividing labor, new control systems, new devices of production. So that's sort of in addition to just the product and process innovation happening. And similarly, we can imagine the opening up of new markets being a feature of the product lifecycle, right? It can happen simply to exploit technology by selling it to more customers, as in sort of active strategic process, or it can happen in a more organic way, so the technology sort of just constantly evolves and becomes relevant to potentially larger and larger groups, right? You can imagine the internet, for instance, which was considered initially relevant only for research institutions and the military, but then turned out to be relevant for so many more contexts that it is now thought of as essential infrastructure. Right. And with that, we can sort of turn from Abernathy to March. And bear in mind, we'll be returning to all of these themes throughout the course. But for now, let's turn to March and his concept of exploration and exploitation. And these, it's important to understand, are two fundamentally different activities with very different characteristics and different effects over time. And the essential idea to take from March is that there is a trade-off between these two activities. And this trade-off is very hard, right? For March, you cannot really do both activities at once because they're mutually exclusive. One sort of pushes out the other. But before we sort of get to why that might be the case, let's talk about what they mean specifically. Now, they're referring to two distinct processes of organizational learning, right? Exploitation refers to the utilization of knowledge that you already have by improving what you already do. Right? You can talk about this as refining ideas that you already work with. It's about reducing variation. Exploration, on the other hand, refers to the search for new knowledge, actively trying to increase the variety of ideas, trying to invent new opportunities and experimenting. It's not unreasonable to say that Abernathy's fluid organization is characterized by much more exploration than the more specific one, and that the specific organization is characterized by exploitation. We're not saying that exploration is the same as being fluid, but we're saying that there are sort of common features in the activities that they involve, But fundamentally, exploration is associated with uncertainty. Now, these two activities are also different in their consequences, right? If you compare the returns, and I'm going to quote, from exploitation, the returns from exploration are systematically less certain, more remote in time, and organizationally more remote from the locus of action and adoption. And quoting again, the certainty, speed, proximity, and clarity of feedback ties exploitation to its consequences more quickly and more precisely than is the case with exploration. The story is told in many forms. Basic research has less certain outcomes, longer time horizons, and more diffuse effects than does product development. The search for new ideas, markets, or relations has less certain outcomes, longer time horizons, and more diffuse effects than does further development of existing ones, end quote. Right? So again, exploration is characterized by uncertainty, but also has positive side effects that are further out than exploitation, right? Exploitation has an immediate payoff, exploration does not. It's not even clear if exploration will have a payoff, right? Now, when March argues that these two activities, which we can clearly see are very different, but also potentially mutually exclusive, it relates to March's idea that they compete for scarce resources, that this is basically an economic argument being made, right? The two activities need to be funded or allocated attention, and organizations must choose between the two, and or rather choose how they prioritize the two relative to each other. And now it's obvious that these are complex choices, but they must necessarily be made. And again, the conditions for making them are very different, right? When confronted with the choice between exploration and exploitation, it's very easy for organizations to trend towards the exploitative choices, right? Exploitative choices are easier to count on. They're easy to invest in, and if they're a faster way to good financial performance, right? I'm going to quote, its returns are positive, proximate, and predictable, right? Competing on the short time horizon depends on investing in exploitation. But at the same time, that is going to be self-destructive, right? If we return to Schumpeter, it's obvious why that's the case, right? The short-term focus on established technology can make the organization fragile, susceptible to challenge from new technologies that can strike at the center of profits and undermine the prerequisites for competing in an industry, right? It's what March talks about when he talks about suboptimal stable equilibria, or what you might call a success trap, where you keep doing what's been working for you for a long time. By contrast, exploration is necessary to ensure long-term competitiveness, to open up new inputs when the old ones become redundant or run out of lifetime, right? But it can be harder to commit to explorative investments. They're uncertain. They might create positive results, but only far out in the future, and they may very well fail, right? In addition, too much exploration can also have sort of disadvantage. The adaptive systems that engage in exploration to the exclusion of exploitation may end up in the situation where they suffer the cost of experimentation without ever gaining any of the benefits, right? And this is what's called a failure trap. In this way, striking the balance between exploration and exploitation is a real sort of devil's bargain, right? That's the reason why capitalist economies, in Schumpeter's perspective, can be such an anxious place to be for a business, right? It offers an ever-present threat of competition, and this threat can discipline even before it strikes. With that, we will conclude for today. There are many themes to pick up and develop further, and that is precisely what we're going to be doing going forward. If you want to dive deeper into some of these ideas as you think about today's lecture, I encourage you to read chapters 1 and 2 of the textbook, Foundations and Futures of Innovation Management. And I look forward to discussing these issues with you in the exercise classes that are coming up.